Time to bring in our man, Chip Towers from DogNation.com. Chip, how you doing this morning, man?
Fantastic. Sorry for the little delay there, fellas.
No worries. Just glad we got you on here. And we'll start things off with some football talk as over the weekend we found out that Dan Lanning was the defensive coordinator, was named the defensive coordinator at Georgia. And a very weird way that we found out as this came via a FOIA request, which is probably the first time I've ever seen a position as big as defensive coordinator at Georgia come out or come to light through something like that.
Yeah, this whole thing's been pretty odd, you know, in that regard, Sam. I don't know what the great mystery has been, you know, in terms of, you know, just not getting a chance to sit there and ask some questions either of Kirby Smart or Dan Lanning or Glenn Schumann or anybody for that matter. But that's been the way they've decided to handle it. So I'm glad that, the mystery has been solved at least in the grand scheme of things. And, you know, I think at the end of the day, it was not that big of a surprise. I mean, it's kind of what we all thought, what we've been hearing, what we expected. So I'm glad it turned out that way. I think the Glenn Schumann piece is interesting as well. And, you know, how it's all going to be married together, you know, we'll just have to wait till we have an opportunity to sit down with Kirby and get some more details about it. But it's interesting. I wrote about it at Dog Nation this week. I mean, Georgia's got one of the youngest coaching staffs in the SEC for sure, and I'm sure Dan Lanning can do a great job, and obviously Kirby believes in him. But, you know, this is not a guy with a long, deep, record of success. He's going to, you know, kind of be doing it on the fly, and, you know, he's going to have to come through for Georgia to do what everybody expects him to do in 2019.
Yeah, and, you know, we talked to your colleague Mike Griffith yesterday, and he seemed to think that maybe Kirby needs to kind of maybe distance himself a little bit more from being that Saban-type coach and really just completely, you know, for lack of a better term, Sabanizing this program and really trying to put his own stick on it. And one of those ways that, you know, he could do that is maybe be a little more open with the media. And I know that, you know, you guys have talked about this. I've talked with a lot of the other beat guys about this, about how it's definitely a different animal covering Georgia football now than the way it used to be. But, you know, this is one of those where maybe Kirby doesn't always have to be like Coach Saban.
Yeah, you know, I mean, that's a drum I don't like to beat on too much. You know, it's the whole thing is a phenomenon to me when it comes to fans, you know, because, I mean, I get it. Everybody loves Kirby. Kirby's doing a great job. You know, year two, he took you to the promised land, or he got you into the neighborhood at least. You know, there's certainly been a long record of Nick Saban achieving success doing things a certain way, but it never has made a great deal of sense to me, because essentially, you know, we as reporters, we are the mouthpiece and the earpiece of the people. I mean, you know, not to overly dramatic about it, but I mean, you know, with that's what we're here for. We're here to give you information on the team that you follow and care about, and I just think that things are often a lot more difficult than they need to be. But you know, Kirby's got a way of doing things. He's got a blueprint that he knows well that he's followed. And I think, we're going into year four of Kirby, and slowly but surely, you know, more and more things are going to, you know, develop organically that, you know, this is the way Kirby likes to do it. You know, a perfect example is just, you know, what we've seen this week, you know, just the whole touchdown club thing. You know, those are closed to media. You know, he tends to cater those things to donors and people who are paying money. So basically, you know, you can have all the information you want, you know, as long as you're stroking those big checks. I'm sure Kirby will get on the phone, call you, and tell you anything you want to know. But otherwise, You know, it's the press that, are going to deliver information to you. And, you know, a lot of this stuff just doesn't need to be as difficult as it is.
Chip, talking about big checks, that article you referenced, it's up on DogNation.com and on 960TheRef.com. You pointed out that Tennessee, which is sort of a program kind of trying to find its identity under Jeremy Pruitt, their combined salaries of their three coordinators comes in at $3.4 million, whereas Georgia's now paying its three coordinators $2.25 million. Is this a product maybe of Tennessee just sort of, I guess, going above and beyond trying to sign the biggest names in hopes that'll bring success, whereas Georgia may have more of a personal relationship with Kirby Smart that he believes can make this happen, even though they're unproven as coordinators? What is the big difference in the way maybe Tennessee is operating as opposed to what Kirby Smart is doing here in Athens?
Well, that's the reason I brought up the Tennessee model is, and compared it to Georgia, was just simply you know, them going in a different direction, you know, where you've got guys like you know, Lanning and Schumann and Hartley. You know, Tennessee is combating you with you know, Tracy Rocker and Chris Rumpf and T. Martin and Chris Winkie, you know, kind of. They're going a different direction. But, you know, Tennessee has a long and storied history of, you know, outspending everybody on anything. And the interesting thing was last year in 2018, you know, they were about nearly $1 million below Georgia, you know, in terms of coaches' salary. Now, look, it's, you know, it doesn't mean that you spend more money on more, you know, better-known, more experienced coaches, and therefore you're going to have a better staff. But, you know, that's certainly, I think it's something that, you know, Jeremy Pruitt definitely went after. I mean, you know, how deep was Georgia's involvement with Derek Ansley in terms of the defensive coordinator search? I don't know. We'll never know, you know, 100%. But, I do believe that Georgia had communication with Derek Ansley. I think there were discussions there about, you know, what would it take to get you to come to Georgia to coach the defensive backs. And I think Georgia had that conversation for whatever reason. You know, Kirby didn't want to do it. I mean, Derek Ansley's never been a defensive coordinator either, but Jeremy Pruitt was willing to pay him $1 million a year, you know, for 3 years to bring him, you know, to Knoxville to not only coach defensive backs, but to also to coordinate the defense. That's not a small charge, you know, to give him. But, you know, Jeremy Pruitt is you know, unbelievably similar to Kirby Smart when he's going to have a heavy handhold on the defense himself. And you know, I think that was a bit of a risky move. The Chaney move, you know, is incredible. I mean, I definitely get Jim Chaney, you know, deciding to go to Tennessee. I would, too. If somebody wanted to pay me, you know, to do the exact same job, to make a lateral move, $650,000 more a year, I would go do it. And I think Jim Chaney knows what he's doing. I think it's, you know, I think it, again, is an aggressive move, but you still got to have the Jimmys and Joes to run that stuff, and we'll see. So Tennessee's willing at this moment to pay about, you know, $800,000 more a year than Georgia is in salary. But at the end of the day, it's about whether you know what you're doing and not how much you're paid. So, you know, we'll find out pretty quick in 2019 how that experiment's going.
Talking with Chip Towers from DogNation.com. And Chip, you know, with Dan Lanning now as defensive coordinator, James Coley now as offensive coordinator, I have kind of read it like this. You know, Kirby comes in to UGA, brings in veteran coaches in Mel Tucker and in Jim Chaney. You know, these guys are there to kind of help him negotiate some of the tougher things that come with being a head coach for the first time. Now that they've each moved on, we see him go with very, you know, much younger appointees to take their place. Is this almost maybe Kirby's way of saying, look, I've been here long enough now, I've gotten that experience, I leaned on those veterans at first, but now I want to put my stamp on this and maybe build kind of my own coaching tree here?
Yeah, no, I think that's exactly what's going on. I mean, I think it's natural progression. I mean, you know, we may see the same thing from Jeremy Pruitt, you know, 3 or 4 years down the line if he continues to be successful. And, yeah, I mean, I, you know, I, Kirby, Kirby has a lot of things and he lacks a lot of things, but one of the things he lacks isn't confidence, for sure. You know, I mean, and this is a guy that clearly knows what he's doing. He's been able to put it into action. He's gotten Georgia into the SEC championship game 2 years in a row. So we'll see. I think the key is, it's always going to be, is it comes down to players. And I like Georgia's players. I like Georgia's roster. Now, look, you know, 2019's got a little bit of a different dynamic to it than I would have seen in the outset, you know, just because Georgia had so many of these guys turn pro. I mean, I don't think Kirby expected that. I don't think he expected quite as many of these guys to decide to turn pro after their junior year. So you're going to be a little bit young. You're going to be a little bit green in some positions. But, you know, the recruiting is what it is. You know, these guys are you know, 3-2-1 or whatever it's been in recruiting these last 3 years. They're just going to have to be put into action a whole lot quicker. And, you know, in terms of whether these guys know what they're doing, I mean, you know, Lanning and Schumann, they did it. They were the guys that coordinated the defense for the Sugar Bowl. You know, Georgia didn't play great in the Sugar Bowl, but I didn't see any, you know, major, you know, coaching gaffes necessarily for that, for the Sugar Bowl. So I think they know what they're doing, and I think we'll just have to give it some time and see how it turns out.
Chip, switching gears just a little bit, an article you wrote also this week. Tomorrow, the Georgia Athletic Association board members are going to get together. I assume you're going to be there. Kind of taking notes on what they talk about. You outlined in an article some things that they may be proposing on spending basically a whole lot of money on facilities around here. What are some of the highlights you're expecting to come out of that meeting tomorrow?
Well, you know, it's actually, I think we're all going to be a little bit disappointed, because my understanding is in the actual meeting itself, they're really not going to get into the new football facility all that much. The majority of the conversation on facilities is going to be focused on the new tennis facility, which is getting, I understand, we'll hear the numbers tomorrow, but I think it's supposed to be more than $8 million to finally fix up the Dan McGill tennis complex and the Henry Field Stadium courts in particular. As I pointed out in the article, it's kind of interesting that Georgia has raised, my understanding, in the neighborhood of $100 million since September of 2015, by the Dan McGill Society, and to date, not a quarter of that's gone toward tennis, which was the sport that Dan McGill held most dear. But he did love football and understands football, and eventually Georgia is going to build another football-only dedicated facility, a building, as I understand it, and add to the Buttsmere complex. And you know, I wish we could get a look at some renderings or some plans or something at this meeting, but I don't think that's going to be the case. I think we're going to hear just a little bit about what they're doing on the vetting process for architects and engineers, and you know, and that's about all that we're going to get out of that. But that's coming. That's down the line, and I suspect that'll get moved to the front burner, you know, somewhere around the fall meeting or so of next year. Otherwise, you've got the tennis improvements, you know, $3 million into the equestrian. Something's going on as far as some new lights, a lighting project down at Sanford Stadium. I'm eager to hear what that's all about. But it really is amazing, guys. I mean, you know, there's a lot of money coming in to the University of Georgia, a lot of money coming into the SEC right now. And, you know, these are technically nonprofits. You're already doing just about everything you can possibly do for the student athlete, but you can't pay them. So, you know, Georgia's doing the same thing that everybody else around the SEC is doing. They're spending their money on coaches and buildings. And, you know, there's a little bit of hypocrisy to all that, in my personal belief, but that's what you got to do. You got to spend that money somewhere. And, you know, Georgia's going to get continue to get new buildings, and we'll find out tomorrow if you know what the plans are for spending some more of that moolah is.
Hey Chip, we're gonna talk to Coach Crean when we sign off with you here, and I wanted to get your thoughts on the basketball team's performance from over the weekend, because you know LSU is a very good basketball team, and I definitely saw a lot of improvement from Georgia's end. Not able to you know, get that win in the end, but still a much better performance than some of the ones we've seen recently.
Yeah, that was, you know, probably if you, you know, more than two-thirds of the league, if you'd had that kind of performance against, you would have won. Unfortunately, you're playing against LSU, you know, which is arguably one of the best teams in the league. I mean, I think it's pretty clear at this point that Tennessee, Kentucky, and LSU are sort of the class of the league, and Georgia played really, really good. I mean, you know, that's really got to help their confidence a lot, but it doesn't get any easier from here. Now they got Mississippi State coming in, another team I think has maybe just five losses or something like that. And, you know, Commissioner Sankey's goal was to improve the overall product of basketball in the SEC. It's happened. I think we're seeing that this year. The league overall, top to bottom, is much stronger. Georgia's obviously in the developmental phase under Tom Green. Tell him hey for me, by the way. I'll be talking to him a little bit later this afternoon as we get ready for Mississippi State. But that was a good game. And, I think it is what it is at this point. You know, we know that Georgia's not all of a sudden going to, hit a button and a light's going to come on and they're going to, you know, turn this season around and you know, somehow make an NIT bid or something at this point. I mean, it's a rebuilding year. Next year's going to be really interesting to see. Right now you've got that cornerstone piece of Anthony Edwards to build on, and until we get to then, I don't think we're going to see a great deal of success. In the meantime, you know, I had a lot of people on my Twitter feed when I was talking about, you know, Georgia playing a whole lot better, not just in this game, the other game. People are like, is that where we are now? You know, is it moral victories? And it's like, what other kind do you see coming at this point? I mean, I think Tom Crean's doing the best he can to implement his system and to get Georgia to play the way he wants to play so he can show recruits of the future how he wants to play. And that's been successful so far, getting Anthony Edwards to come here. And Georgia's got two or three more spots that they're going to be able to fill. In the meantime, you know, we're going to have to take what we can get from Georgia. And I think they're right there on the edge, guys. They need another win or two to avoid this being the, you know, worst Georgia basketball season in decades. And I think we'll see that. I think maybe whether it's against Mississippi State this week or, one of these other teams down the line, Ole Miss, Auburn, Florida, or Missouri, down to that final game on the road at South Carolina. Those are all tough opponents. But Georgia desperately, I think, needs to get a W just to, you know, give these guys something, you know, to hang their hat on before the season ends.
All right, Chip, thank you so much for joining us, and we'll talk to you again next week as we inch closer to the start of spring football practice and the G-Day game coming up here in April. Thanks, Chip.
Looking forward to it. See you guys.
Our man Chip Towers from DogNation.com.